Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So before you go and get your genetic profile done as a lark to find out if you're really 1/16th Scandinavian or something, listen to this. My next guest, New York Times medical correspondent Gina Colata, tells the story in a new book of a family she calls almost archetypal, a family afflicted by a disease that was passed down through generations, and the way science now allows people like this family to be tested to determine whether they have the gene for the disease. It's a grim advancement in some ways, but one that some people welcome nonetheless. Gina Colata's new book is called Mercies in Disguise, a story of hope, a family's genetic destiny, and the science that rescued them. Hi, Gina. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. It's wonderful to be back again. Thank you so much.
And listeners, if you've dealt with something like this, give us a call and tell us how you made your decision to be tested or not. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Would you walk toward this? Are you grappling with a decision related to this yourself? 212-433-9692. As Gina writes in her book, if your family carried a mutated gene that foretold a brutal illness and you were offered the chance to find out if you'd inherited it, would you do it? Would you walk toward the problem, bravely accepting whatever answer might come your way, or would you turn away, hoping to protect yourself from knowing too much? So give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, if you have a story to tell or a related question, 212-433-9692. So the family you chronicle in the book has a gene mutation for a degenerative and curable brain disease called GSS. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes. At first, they didn't even realize that there was this inherited disease in their family, and then the grandfather, who's sort of like the patriarch, started having some unusual symptoms. He was getting unsteady on his feet. He was losing coordination in his hands. And no one could figure out what it was. The doctor said, oh, it's a combination of Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. And the family said, this is not right. They took him to doctor, doctor to doctor. No one knew. Meanwhile, they kept saying Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Meanwhile, he kept getting worse and worse and worse until he couldn't walk. He was having a lot of trouble swallowing. He couldn't really talk. And no one knew what it was. The family, through sort of an amazing sequence of events, because this is sort of a medical mystery as well as a story of do you want to know, figured out for themselves what the disease was, and they were right. And now they know that this is a disease that if you inherit one copy of a mutated gene, you will get it. There is no escaping it. And if you do get it, it will kill you, and you will probably get it around middle age. And it may take 5 or 6 years, but there is no way of slowing it or stopping it. So now this raises a lot of difficult questions. I mean, if you decide to be tested and you have the gene, do you want to get married? Who's going to take care of you? Do you want to have children? What's going to happen to the children? And then if you decide not to be tested, you have the same questions. Do you want to inflict this on people? What if you have it? Knowing that this disease is in your family changes you in a way that people kind of didn't expect in this family, the Baxley family. And finding out whether or not they had the gene. Also, it's hard to predict how you're going to react, I found out, until it happens to you. In fact, this story was so incredible. I had this very astute editor who said, don't write it like a reporter. Write it in the voice of a novelist. I mean, it's all true. Mm-hmm. But write it as the omniscient observer, because you almost, you know, if you sort of live the story with this family and see how they manage to keep themselves together, maintain hope, find ways of dealing with what seems like an impossible situation, one friend read the book and said, it's fiction, right, Gina? I said, actually, it's not. It's true. But it was probably an incredible experience
and probably an indication that it was well written, funny enough, if they thought it was fiction. How old was the father in this case when the symptoms struck?
He was pretty old. He was like in his 70s. He was just retiring when it became clear that everything was really going wrong.
So that
other
changes.
People in the family got it a lot younger.
Yeah. So that changes. Oh, other people did get it a lot younger.
They got
so
like in their 50s. Risk. Yes, much younger. That's more typical. Getting it that old is very unusual.
So in this family, some people decided to get tested and some
right.
didn't. Amanda, a young woman whose father and grandfather had succumbed to the disease, chose to get tested. Let's talk about her. What were her reasons, or why would anyone make that choice when the disease has no treatment and cure?
She felt like she had to have some sort of control. She had to know. She couldn't not know what was going to happen to her. And she had seen her grandfather, her father, and two uncles. I mean, not only that, her aunt had also gotten it and died. And once they knew it was in the family, and then people started getting struck by it, it was amazing to see what happened to these vibrant, lively people, professionals, doctor, dentist. You know, they were destroyed by the disease. But she felt she had to know. And her mother said, don't get tested now while your father's in the last stages. It will kill him to know that you have it if you do have the gene. And her boyfriend said, don't get tested. It'll ruin things for us. But she said she just had to know. So she went ahead and she did get tested. Her sister said she didn't want to know. And her sister said it's not for her to know the future. And she feels that it's almost like a kind of a hubris to say, I want to know what my life is going to be. She thought she'd rather not know. She put her faith in God is what she said.
And do you report on how Amanda and her sister's tests, one did get tested.
I do. But, you know, it's one of these stories where people who read the book said they couldn't put it down. They just kept, a lot of people read it in one day.
We should do a spoiler
and I feel
alert
like
here.
I don't want to give it away because I feel like you don't want to know too much. But what was interesting was people who found out that they had the gene said nothing prepared them for it. Nothing. They thought they were prepared, but finding out they had it, it changes you in ways that you don't predict. You think you only have so many days left on this earth, so you have to make every day count. And it hardens you in a way where things that used to sort of bother you, trivial little things, they don't matter anymore because you know you only have so many days and you've got to make the most of everything that's coming to you. And then you have this question of, like, what do you tell your friends? What do you tell your family? Do you tell your employer? What do you do about this? It's, you know, you think you know. You think, I can deal with it. I'm ready. But they said, until you know, you're not ready.
Dana in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dana.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 27 years old. I have bilateral tumors in both breasts that I've had for the last 12 or 15 years. And I have unusual family history of my grandfather on my dad's side had breast cancer. So I went from having my tumors checked every, 6 months, like you normally would, to all of a sudden on one of my routine checkups, they said there's this new threshold with anything above 2 centimeters, you automatically extract, which I thought was kind of weird. So I got a bunch of second opinions, and they said, well, because of my family history, I should get genetic testing to see if my dad has a gene. If he doesn't have the gene, then I'm not at risk. But, you know, they told me that, you know, they hoped that no matter how the results came back, that I would be prepared to do what was necessary, which is basically challenging a 27-year-old to get a preemptive double mastectomy if that's what was needed. Mm. So that's something that we're kind of waiting for right now, and my dad's waiting for his test results, and then I'll get mine if he comes back positive.
Wow. So if your dad comes back negative and you're not at risk,
right,
then that changes what you need to do medically, even
yeah,
though you
absolutely.
Have these tumors?
Yeah, because something that's benign can't, like, all of a sudden grow, like, a malignant arm. It stays
right.
benign. And there's just one that's, you know, it's like, which one is not like the other? Because there's, you know, multiple when you have a specific type of tissue. And, you know, I've already made lots of medical changes, like going off hormonal birth control and things like this. And I just felt like the medical community was pretty scalpel happy and ready to operate when
yeah.
there's, you know, really no medical risk. This was, like, very routine until this, like, you know, seemingly arbitrary threshold was thrown in my face, and then genetic testing became my information-finding mission to see if, as a, you know, a very young person, if I would need to, like, do a huge surgery or not, you know?
Did you have any conflictedness over whether to get tested, or is this just a more clear-cut case of this is more, it just helps you to know?
Yeah, it's a fact-finding mission, in my opinion. I mean, I'm from New York. I was raised, like, very, you know, not super progressive, somewhat traditional, but, you know, not, like, especially religious. So I didn't have a lot of, like, moral conflict.
Gina, anything you want to ask Dana?
Well, if you have other people in your family, anybody who, if you find out that there's a genetic risk in your family, then everybody kind of then knows that they have the option
right.
to be tested.
Well, then my brother
and that
would
sort
probably
of like extends
tested,
the whole
and
thing,
I would
right? Yeah,
my children,
so,
you know.
Yeah, right. So it starts spreading out. It was interesting when they were looking for a Huntington's disease gene. I tell this story very briefly in my book, Mercies in Disguise.
That's like the most familiar example.
Okay. Well, with Huntington's, people were asked before they found the gene, if we have it, would you want the test? And almost everybody said yes. I would want to know. Then they found the gene, and almost nobody gets tested. It shows how difficult it is to know this about yourself. And especially with something like GSS in my book, Mercies in Disguise, or Huntington's, where it's a fatal disease and there's nothing you can do. It's not like a bilateral mastectomy can help you if you have, I hope you don't have it, but here there's nothing you can do.
Dana, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that's helpful to other listeners. Thank you. And let's go on to Gwen in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC with Gina Colata. Hi, Gwen.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I grew up, my father had Parkinson's disease, and because of that, my entire family decided to participate in 23andMe. It was a little bit of, some stress before we sent off the tube in the mail and got the results back. None of us had the mutations related to Parkinson's, so it's most likely related to environmental factors or other factors that we just don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really important to participate in the research so that not only my father but myself could be part of this, finding out what these causes are for diseases like Parkinson's.
Is the state of Parkinson's treatment such that it would have helped your prognosis to know so early if you had come back positive? Do you know, Gwen?
No, not right now. That doesn't necessarily mean it won't change in the near future.
Right.
And they do need people who will participate in studies. The Baxley family that I write about in my book actually did participate in studies. That was one thing that happened. Once they knew this gene was in their family, they said, you know, we want to try to help other people too. And there's one of the problems with some of these rare diseases is there's lots of ideas and never enough funds, never enough volunteers for studies. So I think it's really important.
I saw, and Gwen, thank you for your call. I saw you reported earlier this month in the Times on news that seems related to the story you've written about in your book, that the FDA ruled it will allow the company 23andMe to sell simple tests that will tell people their genetic risks for certain diseases. Why did the FDA previously not allow it?
What the FDA wanted 23andMe to do was to show that their test, their simple test, was going to give the same result as a real detailed sequencing of that gene. Because the last thing you want to do is make a mistake on these things. And then they also wanted the company to show that people understood their description of what the findings meant. Because what they were doing is something that's kind of unusual. They were saying, you don't have to have a genetic counselor. You don't have to have a doctor. You don't have to have anything in your medical record. You send us your saliva, and when you get back your test results, it will include information on whether you have mutations or alterations in your genes that predispose you. None of these alterations are a guarantee you're going to get the disease, but that predispose you to these various diseases. And before, when they had tried to do this, they hadn't proved that they were as accurate as the the gene sequencing, and they hadn't proved that people could understand what they were telling them. So the FDA asked for that, and the company said they did it. The FDA said they were satisfied. So it's kind of like a whole new era. Now you can find out if you're at risk for some of these diseases. And with many of these things, like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, there's not much you can do about it except for just know that you're at risk.
Yeah. So if this information is widely available through companies like 23andMe, do you worry, or are medical professionals worried, that people won't realize the psychological effect all of this information could have on them, like the profound, you know, life-changing impact of the members of this family you describe in the book?
I think that there are a lot of people who feel that you need a genetic counselor. These are not sort of snap decisions you can make without knowing much else about the disease.
Casually stumbling into these tests because,
right.
Oh, 23andMe, let's
right.
find out what my genetic profile is, and then you find you have
right.
GSS.
On the other
risk.
Hand, there is a guy named Robert Green at Harvard who has done a lot of tests for Alzheimer's risk. And once again, this is risk, not certainty. And it's Alzheimer's in old age. And he randomly assigned people to have a lot of counseling before having the test or just to have it and get the results. And he found that people could understand and deal with the results without a counselor. So it's kind of, now people are up in the air on this mm-hmm. thing. It's not clear. But 23andMe is going to offer the test.
We'll continue in a minute with New York Times medical correspondent Gina Collada. Her new book, Mercies in Disguise, A Story of Hope, A Family's Genetic Destiny, and the Science That Rescued Them. Stay with us. WNYC with New York Times medical correspondent Gina Collada, who's written a book called Mercies in Disguise, A Story of Hope, A Family's Genetic Destiny, and the Science That Rescued Them. What's the science that rescued them part? Because the story you've been telling so far is of the family members who would find out whether they had this rare and crippling disease, but that there was no treatment.
That they were trying to figure out what this disease was. Scientists were sort of closing in on what the gene was and what it did. And once they had this, at the same time, reproductive scientists or infertility specialists were discovering that there is a way, if you, as the Baxley family, did not want to have children have prenatal diagnosis after the women were pregnant and then abort babies that might have, or abort fetuses that have the gene.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a way. The science that rescued them allowed people to have babies that don't have the gene. You start out with in vitro fertilization, and then you let the embryos grow for a few days, and they pluck out one cell from each of the embryos, and they test it for the gene. If they find the gene mutation, they destroy the embryo. So it never gets to start to develop past a few days. And you can be guaranteed, and they actually have done a lot of studies to show the accuracy of this, you can be just about guaranteed that if you have children with this method, they will not have the gene.
Wow. So as, and that raises as people a whole said, other. This,
right.
A whole other a set of marks. Because
right.
I would imagine.
That's right.
And I haven't read this part, but I'm guessing that the anti-abortion rights community would consider this a form of eugenics. And so even if you're just talking about, you know, your own risk of Parkinson's or whatever the disease is, you don't want to be selecting embryos and destroying your ones that have it and not destroying your ones who don't.
Well, you know, Brian, this is a Southern Baptist family, extremely religious, and taking this step was very, very difficult. To say we're going to destroy these embryos was not something anybody took lightly. It's a really difficult. It was a very difficult decision for them. What you're saying too, and it's not just people who would say you could never destroy any life, but people also would say, okay, here's a disease. It doesn't strike you for 50 years or so. So you're going to say that life is not worth living because at age 50 or so you're going to get a disease? Or you're going to say, and I also think that in 50 years there still will be no way of preventing or treating it. Mm. These are not easy decisions.
On the other hand, if you're actually able to have a choice because of the technology,
right,
and you can have a baby that you know isn't going to have that disease.
Right.
That's
right.
That's, you're not going to have more babies. You're just going to have the one instead of the other. So
that's right.
It's no more lives or no fewer lives. And that's,
right.
And the morality of technology.
Right. Sorry to interrupt you, Brian. And yes, people in this family said, if you do this, the disease stops with me, they would say. It's been going on. We traced it back 5 generations. This is the end of it. It's not going to go on to the next generation. And that's a powerful thing to say. But you're right. It's fraught with all sorts of moral difficulties. It's not an easy decision. And it's expensive, very expensive to have this technology, like over $20,000 for an attempt. It's really a lot of money.
Bob in Morris County. You're on WNYC with Gina Collada. Hi, Bob.
Yes, good morning. Hello, Gina.
Hi.
I have been dealing with Huntington's disease in my wife's family for since 1980, so I've had a lot of experience dealing with it, and I have some advice. Find a support group if you find that you have to deal with Huntington's or any other genetic disease. It got me through it. I could never have, as a caregiver, I could never have handled it alone. But through the help of the support groups that are available to us, at least here in New Jersey and in the New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, they're out there.
How did they help you, Bob?
Well, I'm also a recovering alcoholic, and the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous and sharing your situation, knowing that you're not alone, knowing that there are other people who are facing the same set of circumstances that you are facing, and how they handle them, is what gets you through.
Community is good. That's for sure, and central and so necessary in so many aspects of life.
Can I make a comment,
Gina,
too?
Please.
Okay. Well, as we mentioned, Amanda's father had the disease and died of it. And Amanda's mother at first just wanted to be very private and keep things, you know, not sit there and tell everybody her story. And then she would find people come up to her and say, "How are you? How is Buddy?" And she's saying, telling the same things over and over, which was so difficult. She joined a website called Caring Bridge, where she could write down what was happening to them and how they were feeling. And she said it was, you know, it was like almost, these are not people, and this is like just friends and neighbors, but she got the most amazing support from that too. And she said she learned that talking about these things, and really, you know, you suddenly realize you have a lot more support and love in your community than you had realized.
We're almost out of time. The harrowing process that the family in your book went through is about to get a lot more common. So what's the difference between what the Baxleys discovered with their genetic testing and what the $199 23andMe tests will tell people today?
What the Baxleys discovered is they are, if you have the gene, you're going to get the disease and you will die from that disease, probably in middle age. The 23andMe test, the most common disease they're testing for is Alzheimer's in old age. And it would say, they will say, you have a greater than normal risk of getting this disease probably in your 80s or so. So it's really different than saying in your 50s, in the prime of life, you're going to die of this neurological disease, but in the way many, as you point out, many of the same issues arise. Do you want to know? What are you going to do about it? There is no way to prevent Alzheimer's, and at this point, there's no treatment that slows it down. So I don't know. I mean, it's very hard. These are not easy decisions for anybody to make, as far as I can say.
It's the story of one family, but it's a story that will face so many more of us as these tests become more varied and more sophisticated. Gina Culotta, medical reporter for The Times. Her new book is called Mercies in Disguise, A Story of Hope, A Family's Genetic Destiny, and the Science That Rescued Them. Gina, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Brian. It was great talking to you.